6:39, that overly important sounding music must mean our friend Dr. Kevin Most is standing by. Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, Impact Every Day. Good morning, Doc.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Well, I feel bad for the speether. Little Jordan.
No kidding. Wow.
Normally, we all have our meltdowns on the golf course, and the only people watching are your three friends who can't stop laughing at you.
Yeah.
When you hit the worst shot of your life, and millions are watching, that's bad. Because you know this, Doc. It's not the first one in the water. It's not the one in the bunker.
It was the second.
It's the Trump divot.
Yep.
It's the hairpiece he hit. That's the one he can't get out of his head.
Oh, you feel sorry for him. And then also, then his strategy and his mindset just have to change completely when he gets on that 13th tee.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. When you panic at the highest level, and I've heard athletes at all levels talk about this, when you panic at the highest level, it's no different than when you panic playing for a couple of bucks on a Saturday morning on a golf course. The mind goes down the same way. Everything rushes. You just want to get through it, right? And you don't make conscious decisions anymore.
Yeah, but I texted Steve Melnick, and I were texting back and forth during this, and he makes that birdie on 9.
Yeah.
I said, game, match, set. This is over.
Yeah, 5 up.
It's like, wow.
He's 5 up.
But now, we'll take it into perspective, too. He's 22 years old.
He'll be fine.
Yeah, he'll be fine. Yep.
He'll be fine.
We learned a whole heck of a lot.
That's when he actually acted like a 22-year-old, when he hit the flop shot that he didn't intend to flop.
Yeah.
Now, you know Phil Mickelson. You've known him for years.
Yep.
And when Phil lost that U.S. Open on the 72nd hole, we weren't as surprised necessarily because he was struggling with his driver all day and he was hitting it all over the parking lot. When Norman lost 20 years ago at the Masters, he had a meltdown starting basically on the first hole. The thing that was shocking about this is it came out of nowhere.
Oh, it did.
30 minutes.
I mean, yeah, what, he shoots 32 on the front?
Right, now a different guy shows up on the 10th tee.
Exactly.
Very weird. Yeah. Have we tested him? We made him pee in a cup, make sure it was the same guy on the back nine?
Right, right.
So, at any rate, the question today, Doc, is your most embarrassing moment at work. So if you'd like to text us something, this is in honor of Spieth or dishonor of Spieth, I don't know. People think I'm picking on Spieth. No, it's just a timely question. Your most embarrassing moment at work. If you want to text me, you know, something about you and use a different name, we won't say it.
If you had that question for doctors, you would get some very interesting responses.
I bet.
Yep.
I'll bet that's true. All right, so Janet Jackson cancels her tour, at least postpones it at age 50. By the way, did you notice that they're not doing refunds?
I did.
Yeah, no, I heard they are doing some refunds, and then I heard that there were some that were not doing refunds.
Yeah, there's shows where she's going, well, I'm coming back. Why would I give you your money back?
That is just wrong.
It's ridiculous.
That's absolutely wrong.
It's ridiculous. So at any rate, the question came up, is she going to be 50 soon? And we don't know what her status is, but if she needs time to, you know, start her family, you assume she's going to try to have the baby. What's the new thought process as far as how late in life women can have kids?
Yeah, you know, when we look at that, we sit there and say, gosh, remember the old days when we really wanted people to have their first child in their 20s? And now weddings have been postponed a little bit, careers have been advancing, and now it's very common in their 30s. But certainly, after the age of 35, it's considered advanced maternal age, and we really want to watch the women much closer. Higher chance of high blood pressure, higher chance of diabetes. So the risk factors start to go up as you age. When you get up into your 40s and late 40s, those even go higher. And then also the chance of having a child with Down syndrome is very high as you reach, you know, anything over the age of 45.
And are you seeing a lot of over 45 moms?
We're not seeing a lot over 45 moms, but the number of moms over 40 have doubled in the last 10 years. We're seeing a lot more people who did saved eggs and had them frozen and now are having in vitro fertilization. Because after you really hit the age of 45, the chance of natural childbirth drops dramatically. You're down to about 5%, maybe even less of that, of your eggs for a female. So the chance of normal reproduction is very low. But, you know, it's still happening. And hey, if you look at history, we've had women in their 70s deliver children. So it's unusual.
You can act as a surrogate, can't you, Doc?
Yep, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of people that do act as surrogates.
Yeah.
Question, Doc, about family history. That has probably something to do with it, especially if you are over 45?
Well, there's some issues with family history on both sides. You know, some people can have the families where they have had advanced maternal age and have done fine. There's others that have had issues over the age of even 30 and 35, where you have to be much more cautious as you hit later in age.
Well, what is it, a crapshoot when you get older on whether or not it's going to work out?
Well, it is kind of I hate to say that, but it is. Also, the chance of miscarriage just accelerates through this as well. So really, individuals, females that get pregnant in their 40s, they have a 40% chance of having a miscarriage as well. So the chances of carrying a pregnancy in their late 40s through is fairly low. And then you really do, like I said, we have to be careful about the effects on the mother, which would be, you know, the two biggest ones, obviously, are diabetes and high blood pressure.
Outside of in vitro, there's nothing really medically going on that would change those numbers, is there?
No, not really. I mean, it's still, there's nothing, you know, we have more hormonal medications that we can use. We have more things that we can use to protect the mother for some of the concerns. And then the science as far as monitoring the baby is much more advanced. The ability to even do some surgeries prior to the child being born is even happening. So we have much more higher technology with ultrasounds and with blood tests to test for any chromosomal abnormalities as well.
Doc sent us a phenomenal list of medical myths. Myths and medicine. Remember, we were talking about this as well? We're going to run through these lightning round style when we come back after traffic. Mary's here with an update on that on 720 WGN.
Woke up after midnight, both my neck and arms were sore.
Back to Dr. Kevin Most, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine Impact Every Day. This is a great list you put together. Thank you for this.
Did you like that?
Yeah, this is tremendous. So let's run through these. These are medical myths. Stop spreading these, people. As a matter of fact, stop the spread. Wet hair causes colds.
You know, your mom always said that. Put a hat on. Wait till your hair dries before you go outside. You're going to catch your death of cold. You know, my grandma used to say that, and it couldn't be further from the truth. As a matter of fact, it's probably caused more deaths than it has protected. And mainly reason is that, you know, in the winter, you know, people say, don't go out with you're staying inside now. You're around people that are sick, so that you're going to get sick. The chance of you getting sick being outside in the cold with wet hair is zero. You're not going to see more viruses. Viruses are not attracted to wet hair, so don't worry about that one.
Plus, I can't speak to this anymore because my hair is very, very short where there is hair. Yeah. But if you have a full head of hair and your hair is wet, you go outside when it's super cold, you kind of get that crystallized hair thing. It's kind of cool. You can crunch your hair while you're driving. It's a good time.
Right.
Number two.
All right. I can probably speak to this because I used to think this way, Doc. Vaccines cause the flu and autism. Not the autism part, but the flu.
Yeah, so they can't cause the flu. They're dead viruses. They're not going to be resurrected and come to life in your body after you've gotten the vaccine.
You don't get the flu from the vaccine. You don't.
You don't. And probably the bigger one there is the autism one, and that's the one we really got to get across, which is so sad that in 1989, Andrew Wakefield put this, you know, article out in Lancet, and everybody rallied around it. And now we have spent so much money proving that that's not true, where that money could have been used to work for treatment of autism or more of a better diagnosis of autism. So very sad, but get your vaccinations. They're very important for your health.
Yeah, you anti-vaxxers, you have to understand that doctor that did this study that started, and Jenny McCarthy blew it up and has since retracted her statement, but frankly, it's too late. The damage has been done, and you need to spread the word amongst your friends and your friends that might have kids someday that it's nonsense. It's just absolute nonsense. As a matter of fact, Doc, there's parts of the world, you know this, where polio has made a resurgence because people aren't getting vaccinated.
Well, polio and measles, too. We have over 100,000 deaths in the world from measles. I mean, it's
ridiculous.
Amazing. Yeah.
Number three, reading in the dark, sitting close to the TV will cause you to go blind.
That will not. So if you remember, your mom probably, get back from the TV. It's going to cause you to go blind there. No, that won't. It's going to put some eye strain on you. It can give you a headache, but it's not going to have any long-term consequences on your vision. So don't worry about that one. And reading in the dark, again, it's almost the same as being up close. You're going to strain your eyes. You're going to have muscles that have to work a little bit harder with your eyes, but it's not going to have any long-term consequences on your vision.
How about you should drink at least 8 glasses of water a day?
Yeah, this one's kind of classic. You know, everyone hears this. It says, well, no one ever stopped and said, where did that come from? And that came from a study done in 1945 that said you should take in 2.5 liters of liquid in a day because that's how much your body is going to need. Well, what most people don't understand or don't realize is that the vast majority of water that you take in comes from your food, not from just glasses of water. So it's not like you're doing any harm by keeping those 8 glasses of water in your diet, but realize that you really don't need to because you're going to get a lot of water through your food, whether it's soups, even sandwiches, anything has a lot of water in it, and you're still going to get that amount of fluid that you need.
But it's not a bad idea to drink water. That's the point.
No, not at all. Not a bad idea at all. Nope.
You go swimming, you can't eat for an hour.
Yeah, you remember you'd be at a picnic and you want to jump in the lake and you're like, no, you got to wait an hour. Total falsehoods on that. You know, your parents would say, all your blood rushes to your stomach to make sure that you digest the food. Although a portion of that is true, you do have an increased blood flow to your stomach when it's full. It is not going to be coming to a point where you're not going to have enough blood that's going to cause you to have cramps. So really, there's no history behind that at all. So I would not worry about that one.
Okay, this is one of my favorites. Eating chocolate, too much of it, could give you acne.
Yeah. And that's been a big one. You know, fried foods and chocolate are what causes acne, and that's not true at all. You know, acne is caused due to some hormones and oil glands that are going to produce something called sebum, and you get this sebaceous-like material. And it's really because the skin is clogged and you have increased hormone production. So it's more clean skin than it is going to be chocolate. And really, you can eat as much chocolate as you want, and you're not going to break out in any more acne than you would have had you not had that chocolate.
So no chocolate, no fried food problems related to acne. What if you took fried chicken and rubbed it on your skin?
Well, yeah, that could be a problem.
That's probably a good idea.
For teen girls, what they often will do is they want to use more makeup because they think that that's going to, you know, at least hide some of the acne, when in fact that can make it worse because the makeup can actually block the pores and cause the increased blockage there.
Cracking your knuckles will give you arthritis?
It's not going to give you arthritis. You know, arthritis is classically, we've talked about this, it's an immune response, an immune disorder for the body. So it will make your joints more lax, so they'll be able to flex a little bit more, which is not often good. It could cause you injuries, but it's not going to cause you arthritis. May wear down your cartilage a little bit quicker, but it's not going to give you arthritis.
Not a great habit, but you're not going to get arthritis.
Yep.
How about coffee will sober you up quicker? Dave, read this.
Yeah.
Dave, coffee will sober you up quicker. Yeah. Pay attention to it.
Yes, I am.
Probably not a great idea. As a matter of fact, a terrible idea. You know, we always think, I'm going to have 2 cups of coffee. If you were drunk, 2 cups of coffee, all they're going to do is make you an alert drunk or a stimulated drunk.
That's fantastic.
It is not going to sober you up. So don't say, I'm going to have a cup of coffees and drive home. Better off to not go home, take an Uber, or do something else. But that's one that coffee does not turn that around.
I can tell you from being around a lot of drunks during my formative years, you definitely want them more awake. Oh, they're such a good time. Starve a fever, feed a cold.
Yeah, you always hear that. What am I supposed to do? Starve a fever, feed a cold? Because it's fetus, you know, nobody ever knows what the one is. And to be honest with you, it's because neither one makes any sense. For both of those, you want to make sure that you have good nutrition while you're ill, because your body needs energy to help fight off the infection. You want to make sure you have fluids as well. The one thing I would say is people that take Tylenol and Motrin for their fever, you want to make sure you have something in your stomach, because the irritation of those medications in your stomach can cause you more harm. So the big thing when you're ill, still continue with the diet. You might take more soups because they feel good. You want to keep your fluids up because we lose fluid when we have a fever, but that's another one that's nonsense.
Chewing gum stays in your stomach for 7 years?
Yeah, you know, you always heard that once you swallow gum, it's going to be there for 7 years. You know, not true at all. Gum is not absorbed, so it passes through our digestive system just like any other fiber does that would not be absorbed. So it's not hanging on there. It's not that it's sticky and it's sticking to the side of your intestines. It clears through your body. You don't have to worry about, you know, filling your body up with gum.
And this is what I was guilty of. Eating late at night makes you gain weight faster.
Yeah, and you know, that's, Andrea, that's a big one right now, because people really sit there and try to figure out, You know, is it what I'm eating, the timing that I'm eating causes me to gain weight? And no, it's still simple math. What you put in versus what you put out. So, you know, if you take in enough calories, but you exercise and walk and eat properly and do those things, you're not going to gain weight. Now, that being said, people that eat late at night, think about what they're eating. It's not like they're getting broccoli out and eating, right? They're going to White Castle. They're eating ice cream sundae. They're having that bag of Doritos. They're eating foods that are not good for you. So it's not like you eat and say, oh, all that's going to be absorbed because now I'm sleeping. No, the same amount of food would be absorbed. It's a matter of still calories in versus calories out for the day.
Yeah, and if you eat late and then you wake up the next day and you feel like crap, it's because you eat late.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Thanks, Doc. Good stuff as always. And there are several red wine texters who appear to be sober, and that's not a myth. That does help in moderation.
Absolutely. Red wine in moderation, especially for females, is actually good for heart disease. And it's definitely one. And again, like you said, moderation. A glass, two glasses a day is fine, not a bottle a day.
All right. Moment of silence for Jordan Spieth's 12th hole. And I will talk to you later.
You got it. Talk to you soon.
Thanks. Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. Impact every day.